that's generally what I'll shop for. Like, that's what gets me excited when I see a new knife coming out. If it looks like it's going to slice well, if it's got a nice neutral handle, then that's probably the knife for me. And it leaves me with a lot of quite boring looking knives, but you find your differences in them and you fuss over them in your own way, and you see them all as your own little knives, don't you, in the end?
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your hosts, Jim Person and Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Hello, Knife Junkies. Welcome to another episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm Jim Person.
And I'm Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to episode 42 of the Knife Junkie Podcast. And great news to start the show, Bob. I think technical issues have been resolved on the KnifeJunkie.com website.
Indeed, those are in the past, and that's where they will stay.
So that's right.
So the podcast, you know, has been going up weekly on YouTube and on Facebook, but we were wrestling with our hosting company for our RSS feed, and we finally reigned victorious. And so the podcasts are going out on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the other places you listen to your podcast.
Yeah, and just to clarify, they were still going out; they weren't getting out. But they are in your app, your favorite player. I know I use Stitcher. All the shows are there. So if you missed them and didn't listen on iTunes or join our Facebook group where you can catch those shows, they're in your podcast player. So go back and binge listen. We've had some good shows the past 2, 3, 4 weeks that folks need to catch up on.
Yeah, we had Nick Shabazz. We had Ian Pekarski. We had Josh from Razor's Edge. We had Bob Terzuola. So some big interviews. So yeah, make sure you go back into your Stitcher menu or whatever you're listening to,
right.
And check those out.
Yeah, another good one coming up today. But before we get into that, a little bit of knife news you want to talk about. But first, some personal news. You got got a new blade, if you will.
Yeah, well, I just celebrated a birthday, and my brother sent me. My brother always sends really cool gifts.
Can he be my brother?
Yeah, exactly. We are of similar mind and spirit, and so he got me a World War One. It's a Spanish American War / World War One era Collins machete, and it's this giant slab. It's about 18 inches long, I'd say. But the blade is this giant quarter-inch slab of steel, and it pretty much remains a quarter-inch all the way to the tip, and it's a full tang with giant wooden, I think it's walnut, handles in a big canvas-wrapped metal sheath. It is a serious piece of kit. Altogether, it's about 3 pounds. I made a video of it yesterday.
Right,
it was my collection selection, and there I mentioned you could delimb just about anything, tree, human.
Made for a man, because as you said, the thing's got some heft.
Yeah, that's the thing that really shocked me. It's so heavy. And this was something that soldiers back in the World War One time would be carrying in addition to the rest of their kit. And nothing then was lightweight. They didn't have lightweight fibers or you know, wicking uniforms.
Right. 50, 60, 70 pounds of stuff.
Yeah. 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 So this is a very cool birthday gift, this Collins machete built for a real man, hearkening back to the times when when men were indeed men. And then
let me plug the YouTube channel before you get too far.
Please.
If you want to see the Collins machete review or any of Bob's new what he's calling a knife collection selection videos that he's churning out on a regular basis, covering everything in his collection to give you a chance to see it, go to thenifejunkie.com/YouTube and you can catch all the videos. And if you want to go to thenifejunkie.com/YT subscribe, that'll get you subscribed to the Knife Junkie's YouTube channel so you don't miss anything. So sorry for the interruption, Bob. Go ahead.
Not at all. That was the best kind of interruption, Bob. but you'll see so far I've posted at least one Topps knives and one Topps knife or Topps knives knife, and maybe you'll be seeing these next two in my collection sometime soon. I just wanted to announce or just say I'm excited about the two new Topps knives that are coming out just this week. One of them is the Devil's Claw. It's this small talon-shaped blade that they've been putting out for a long time, but they decided to put elongate the handle slightly and put a karambit ring on the back, and it makes a perfect karambit. So that's a cool little thing, the Devil's Claw karambit. And then they've had one that I've admired from afar for years. I've never gotten one, called the Street Scalpel. Great name. It's a full-sized handle but small-bladed knife resembling a scalpel, I guess. and in a tactical sense. And they just came out with a new one, sort of reconfiguring the transition from the blade, from the handle into the blade, and gave it a little finger choil. I guess probably made it a little bit safer for thrusting or just harder utility tasks. And it looks great. And it's a thick slab of metal, but somehow they seem to get the blade down pretty pretty thin. They step it in a little bit, and then they flat grind it. And I don't know. It's just one I'm really excited about. And then since I'm on a little talking jag about knives I want to buy, the third and probably most imminent is purchase is a Microtech Ultratech double-edged. Mm-hmm. That's an out-the-front automatic knife, and I've had my eye on it for years, and I don't have any out-the-fronts aside from this $35 Chinese Lightning that I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I think I might have an Ultratech soon.
All right. Well, before we find out who the guest is today, I want to remind you that if you are like Bob and you constantly are shopping and buying knives, you may want to make sure you sign up and get Ebates. It's free. You can get cash back for your knife purchases or really any purchase that you use online, as well as in stores. But since a lot of folks are doing online shopping, because you're a loyal Knife Junkie listener, if you're not already a member, you'll get $10 just for joining Ebates if you go to thenifejunkie.com/cashback. Now, it's super simple, easy. I use the Ebates Chrome extension, so wherever I go, eBay or any other online merchant, Ebates will pop up and ask if I want to use their link and save some money, and I'm like, duh, yeah. So shop like you normally would, get cash back. Go to thenifejunkie.com/cashback. After you spend $25, you'll get $10 back. So again, thenifejunkie.com/cashback. So Bob, what can we look forward to or listen forward to in the interview coming up?
Well, I spoke with Pete from the Cedric and Ada Gear and Outdoors channel on YouTube, and he's one of my absolute favorite knife reviewers. He's from Australia, and he
good day,
is...
mate.
And he's, oh boy, yeah. And he has a background in filmmaking, and it really shows in his hilarious yet poignant videos. Mm. And they, not only does he entertain with these videos, but his opinion I really value because he spends the time with each knife and really, you know, figures out whether it's hype or if it's a really good working tool. And he does his own, knife testing, steel testing, where he brings, well, we'll let him talk about it, but right. he's one of my favorites on YouTube, and we had a great conversation.
And if you aren't familiar with him, I'm sure after the interview, it'll be one of your favorites too. So let's get into it.
Subscribe to the Knife Junkies YouTube channel at thenifejunkie.com/YouTube.
Aside from, you know, really digging your videos and, you know, kind of watching everyone when they come out, I'm especially interested in talking to you about the knife lab.
Oh, yes.
About your steel testing. And I've heard you refer to it as bro science, which I think is a great term, but I think it might belittle what you do a little bit because you seem to be very consistent. Not necessarily scientific. You know, you're not taking these steels to labs to test, but your process seems very consistent. How did that start? When did you become a steel nerd?
Well, I guess my process is consistent, I suppose. My results are relatively consistent as well. Steel nerd, I would say. I think that's just the way my brain generally goes. I've got a bit of a numbers brain, and so I do like to be able to quantify things. And it was when I started seeing, you get into knives, and then you start seeing the same knife with sprint runs and, you know, so you've got and it was the Ontario Rat when that came out and you see the press that's saying, oh, the Rat 1 is coming out in D2 now, so that's good for you guys that want longer edge retention. And my little numbers brain that wants to quantify these things, I was like, well, has anyone actually tested those next to each other? And I looked up on YouTube and there had been a few guys that have done this before. There was a fellow called Blunt Truth For You. This is an old, old channel. It's now not a... You can't even see it anymore. I think YouTube must have purged it or something. But he did a similar thing with cardboard. And I saw, well, he's done this with cardboard. I think he was showing SGPS, that Vulcaneven Super Steel. He was showing that next to the 440C or something. And he got a really decent, you know, it was a tangible way of showing that, yeah, there is something to having a, you know, in quotes, better steel in your knife. And so I did that first test, Ontario Rat 1 in D2 versus Ontario Rat one in AUS8, and the D2, I think it cut twice as long with a roughly similar edge and all that stuff. And that sort of just set off this, well, if we can show that still was, you know, cuts for longer than that still, what else can we show? And it's changed a lot. It's changed, you know, how I've sharpened. I initially did think I was a bit more scientific than I actually was. And I've sort of tempered that over time. I think the safest way to approach it is that this is all just for fun and people can build their own meaning into it from there, because it just kind of protects me from having really intense discussions with people sometimes as well. Because I said in my most recent video, some folks literally will look at, oh, hey, Pete, you cut, you know, 14C28N versus VG10, and the 14C28N cut 7 more times, so that still was better, isn't it? And I'm just really trying to avoid, so I've sort of scaled it back from that and just really trying to avoid that level of intensity to it. So it's why I sort of have diluted it a little bit more often lately, saying, it's all a bit of bro science. It's all just a bit of fun, me having fun in my house, because in essence, that's exactly what it is. But I'm really happy with it as a body of work. I'm really happy with, you know, this huge list I've got. And I've got this amazing guy in America, Dave, and he's got obviously even more of a numbers brain than I do, because he's more or less, he was asking me to chart all my steels. And I did this really, I'm really bad with those sorts of things on computers. And I did this really average looking list. It was garbage, just if where everything was. And he's come around with this Google sheet that you can still see at the bottom of all my videos. And so Dave is the analyst out of the two of us as well. So, but so yeah, I'm really happy with it as a body of work, and sort of happier with it as just when I do a knife review, I can then sort of say, hey, this steel in the past and in my sort of rope testing, it's done this. So I have this opinion of this steel because of that, rather than just having a less tangible, anecdotal, you know, I feel like this still lasts longer just because. So it helps me in my reviews as well.
I'm a firm believer that two things that are opposite can be true at once. Or anyway, two opposing ideas can be true at once. And on one hand, it's you're not sending it to a lab and it's not super scientific. But that doesn't really play much into it anyway, because we're talking about a tool that does a practical chore. Hmm. And so if you're doing a practical experiment, you know, I think the results are just as valid. They might be anecdotal, but they're just as valid as sending it off to a, you know, a steel lab. I've been collecting knives for a long time, but only really aware of steel for the last 10 years. You know, it's like whatever came on it, as long as it looked cool, because I don't live a real high speed, low drag lifestyle. You know,
for sure.
If it looks cool, I'm down. But I've gotten sucked up into the heady winds of this alphanumeric, you know, M390 just has such a nice ring, but I've never push it to its limit, you know?
Yeah. And it's the companies that have done that as well. They've started kind of branding steels just as much as they're branding their knives. And it's been a real cyclical thing. So the more the companies talk about steels, the more the consumers, like any enthusiast community, we're all intense with our interest, aren't we? So it just gives us more to feed off of, and it becomes this kind of self-perpetuating thing. And I mean, I don't know what they'll be, I'm not sure what they're going to be talking about next. So it's been steels for a good 10 years that people have been sort of fussing over and looking at the next iterations. But you even see it with smaller things, like, you know, you get the ceramic bearings people versus the steel bearings people. And we love these minutiae that the companies kind of give us to fuss over. Like if they just put in their ads that this blade is made of, you know, stainless steel and it's on a washer system, if they gave us much less information, and it'd be a lot harder for us all to dissect it as much. So I think it's very much caused by the industry, but then the nature of the internet at the moment is just that people can grab these little things and just go running away with them. I think it's I'm not sure what the end game of this is going to be. I'm not sure when everyone's going to get sick of this and move on to the next thing, if that's going to happen at all. But yeah, right now it is definitely at fever peak, isn't it?
It's crazy. People love their teams, you know, no matter what that team is. And, you know, a lot of people on these steel teams now. And I want to know, who is the person out there and what the hell are they doing when they have to resharpen M390? I got to say, you know, I got a bunch of it, in my little case over there.
Yep.
And it cuts those errant threads off my collar, you know.
Yeah.
Well, wickedly.
And here's the thing. I had to facilitate me doing a rope cut test for me to really be able to quantify these differences. So it's exactly that. You're exactly right. Most of us are just going to use and enjoy a knife. We may in the back of our mind think to ourselves, gee, I feel like I've sharpened this knife less over the 6 months I've had it, or I feel like I've sharpened this knife more. But as a real end user, that is the experience, I think, for most of us. There are some guys out there who cut carpet with their pocket knives. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
There's guys who work in the box factory, unboxing boxes and boxing more boxes, all that sort of good stuff for sure. But I think they're in the minority a little bit. Like, as I said, yeah, I had to make a test because I wasn't doing enough to be able to say adequately that I could, you know, I needed to say when I did a rope cut, says this cut more than this. It wasn't occurring to me naturally. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It's, Rob Bixby at Apostle P put up an interesting video yesterday.
I was going to ask you about
this term. He used this term, mental masturbation, and he's somewhat right about it all. And I don't see a shame. Not that, you know, it's something that should be shameful or anything like that.
Right.
And we're talking about mental masturbation here. not that we should be ashamed of anything that occurs to us to do with our bodies. But anyway.
Agreed.
it's somewhat correct. There was a lot in that video, a lot to unpack. And
yes.
But really, it was very much so that we are going to have to do these big, long tests to be able to figure out the differences between these steels rather than just, you know, I've been opening envelopes with my knife for 2 weeks and this steel has dulled, because that isn't really many people's lived experience. So, yeah, that was
right.
Just one takeaway I took from that video before the comments got turned off. And
Yes.
We've got this real intensity to it. This is what I'm sort of a bit out of step with. I haven't really been up to speed with the HRC stuff that's been going on lately.
With the what? I'm sorry?
There's the Rockwell testing stuff that's going on lately.
Yeah.
The other guys are doing. And I've really stayed out of it because, for a start, I don't know anything about Rockwell testing particularly. I've got a rough knowledge of the correlation between it and edge retention, but it's got really intense with just the, not vitriol, but like a lot of just, everyone seems to be after a bit of a gotcha moment or after a bit of a, so I've
scandal, something to make it interesting and fun again.
It's a bit like that, isn't it? It's like the Benchmade cutting up guns things died down. So we're after, there's like this undercurrent of people who are just, cause I've got all these DMs on my Instagram thing saying, hey, Rob talked about sisal rope in his, at the end of his video and you should do a video about it. And I'm just thinking, I think all that's going to give everyone it's just going to perpetuate this a bit more and everyone's going to have another. And it's like, this isn't why I'm into knives. This isn't the fun part of the knives to me. So I think that's, it's an interesting undercurrent right now. It's just this. I'm not sure if it's anger, but it's everyone wants to be, catching someone out or getting that new bit of gossip or something. And I kind of just like to cut my rope in my shed and do my very non-committal sort of, hey, this is just my fun testing. Yay. But it almost seems like that's not enough for folks at the moment. But I guess we'll just see how it all pans out. Cause I think in its purest form, it's a really admirable thing that they're doing. We always use car analogies, don't we? Because I guess that's a pretty understandable thing to everyone. But I guess it's that whole thing. If you're buying a car that's supposedly got an excellent engine, even though you're only ever going to go 45 miles an hour tops in that engine, you want to know that it can do what it says on the box, I guess.
Right.
So it's really,
you want to feel like you've been had.
Yeah. It's an admirable thing to pursue that these companies they're giving us these super steels, they should quite rightly be putting it and presenting it to us in a way that is super. So say if you're giving us K390, so I've got a Spyderco police here on the table. Spyderco does this K390 at about 64 Rockwell. It presents it to us at, you know, a relatively thin behind the edge grind. I think it's 20,000th or something like that. It's fine. So it's a good presentation of the K390, right? But if they put this on a sharpened pry bar with a 25 degree per side edge, really fat behind it, the K390 is not going to, it may as well have been 154 cm or something, just a more, you know, less exotic steel, and then the knife could have been cheaper and all that. So in a sense, it's definitely pursuing that, but it's just the nature of the internet, though. It just gets really out of hand really quickly with the memes and with the intensity to it. And it's just something I've kind of stepped a little bit back from, but, it's been very interesting to see. And that poor old Rob had to turn the comments off on his video, I think. But then you put yourself out there and that's what happens as well.
It's exactly
the thing. It's kind of probably why I haven't really made like a direct address to it, because for a start, I don't have the knowledge to be able to. I saw the Ferrum Forge guys, you had them on recently.
Yeah.
They did a video about it that seemed to get mixed responses. It's the sort of thing, no matter what you say, you're going to get a really mixed response and you're going to end up in an argument. And so I guess I'm just saying to everyone, I don't know much about it to have an opinion. So I probably can't contribute to this discussion too much more than just saying, maybe it's just for everyone relax a bit.
Yeah, relax. And these are my findings. And it's really, it's not that important. It's important because it's important to us because we get, you know, satisfaction out of it. It makes our lives more interesting and fun. But really,
for sure.
One thing he said about that, in that video that that really resonated with me was when he says, you know, these are experts at what they do, you know, knife companies, they've been manufacturing knives for a long time. It's probably their intention to stay in business and probably not their intention to hoodwink anyone. You know, there are mistakes. There was that Hootenanny thing a couple of years ago where people thought they were getting S30V and it ended up being some kind of carbon steel. But really, you know, I experienced this in my work life. I produce television stuff, and it's not infrequent that you meet a client who thinks they're a producer. And I'm like, you know, I don't do what you do and you don't do what I do. So you can have guidance and vision and opinion, but, you know, kind of let me do what I'm going to do. And if I make a mistake, I'm not trying to screw you over. I made a mistake.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's funny and this is why I really try and get ahead of myself. And it's why I'm always telling everyone I'm really not an expert, or I'm just doing my certain thing at home. I don't know the full story. I don't even know the full story of Rob seemed to, he sort of suggested he knew a bit more. I don't know. I'm not sure of the full story, but, just interesting to see, just how far people will sort of carry it as well. I'm just interested to see, like, what the end stage of this is like. Cause I think the guys now are doing, they think they're raising some money and doing some, Catra testing. And that is, I guess, that's a pretty well regarded I'd probably regard Catra testing better than my sisal testing if you're after flat science. It gives you very definitive numbers. So
is that thing with the little wire that you cut?
The knife blade is sort of held and it cuts through cards, like some cardstock, and it's the same cardstock. It's all very controlled. So I think their intentions are really good. They're raising some cash to go out and do some Catra testing. So I think again, what they're sort of saying is, you know, these steels should be given to us in a way that they act like the super steels that they are. And they totally get that as well. So yeah, I'm very interested to see like where it all goes and what the end result is for sure. Cause, I certainly won't be making a video on it though, cause I'll just end up with my bloody thumb in my ass, not knowing quite what to, you know, I won't have the full story. And one half that has half the full story and the other half that has the other half will all be in the comments all arguing with each other. And I just think like this is our leisure time, isn't it, people? Like this is what we're doing to have fun and to unwind when we're not at our, you know, jobs, you know,
right,
when our noses aren't against the grindstone. You know, let's do it in a fun way, at least. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
I can never help but think when something like this comes up, you know, there's some scandal in the knife world. And people start taking it real seriously. I think I impose my own thoughts on it, which is sometimes I catch myself, you know, falling asleep thinking about my collection.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, that is not what you want to be doing. Like, yes, you know. It's good to manage your collection, but I mean, like, when something really important happens, and usually something really important is bad, when something bad happens, all of these thoughts will be so long gone.
Yep.
And if they're not long gone, I will be regretting spending all that time
and the energy. It's just, you don't get that back, you know? And the only thing I'd sort of leave it on is that the entire supply chain, from the person who designs the knife to the company that makes to the shop that sells it to the users that comes and does the testing. And this is applicable to everyone on both sides, is that I think everyone is just trying their best and everyone is working, I think, in good faith. I don't think there's too many sharks in the larger production industry. You hear about the dodgy odd company that says it's made somewhere that's not, all that sort of stuff. But
yeah.
I think in real terms, like whether it's the guy who's doing his testing thinking he's doing the right thing, he means well. But then so does the customer service person who you talk to when you send them the Instagram comment. They mean well as well. They just want to do their job. I had a very humbling experience last year when I did one of my tests on a steel wheel knife, and this kind of put a lot of it into perspective for me. Steel wheel. I get steel wheel and real steel confused all the time, but it was a steel wheel knife. Yeah, it was. Shit. And I got a weird result with it on the rope, and I did do a pretty thorough test on it, but in my opinion, in hindsight, I was too... I did that whole thing, and I felt like, you know, when you have you worked in retail?
Yes.
And you get those people who take it out on you at the front line, and their problem is with the organization eight levels above you, but you're at the counter and you're getting the Karen who's walked in with that short haircut who wants to talk to the manager, and she's going. And I felt like I was being, in hindsight, I felt like I was being that person a bit, because I took the, you know, these guys who work for their social media at these companies, they'd just be like a clerk or an admin person, you know, like it's, and I sort of think, I was too intense. I was too, I was probably too quick to, you know, think that I'd got them. And I think in hindsight, yeah, I think there was a problem with that knife. They fixed it. It was just ended up being like a warranty thing or whatever. And I always regretted that. And I just, it's the only caution I'd give to everyone is that you, these are real people at every step of this chain. And, you know, you feel like you're in the right, but everyone else is, I honestly think most people are just trying their hardest to just do their best when they come to work and do their 8 hours. And it's just something that I'd sort of hope that everyone operates with that in their minds, because that's certainly how I try to operate lately.
I agree with you 100%. Sorry to interrupt you, but it's like if you're going to try and bulk people out of money, there are way better industries to do that in. You know, why go into the knife industry if you're going to try and, like, you know, make millions of dirty, filthy lucre?
Yeah.
So when, Pete, when did you get into knives? Have you always been a knife guy? Is this?
I had, no, I was a massive, anime nerd, which I still am, a massive video game nerd, which I would be if I had more time. But it was really just, and I was saying this the other day, I can't remember in what forum, but I was at that stage where I've got little kids at home. I've got a bit of, you know, that free time you have, you got kids?
Yes.
You know that free time you have that's not really free time when your kids are really small? Yep. You know, you don't, they're still at your house, but they're kind of just doing not much for the whole day. So I had that kind of free time. So not where I could sink like 20 hours into a video game, not where I could sort of go out and do anything of, you know, particular substance. So I kind of just ended up collecting things, and I was doing a few odd jobs around my house. And so it'd be probably in the last 8 years or something, I would say. I was living rurally. I was starting to use, just from practicality's sake, I was using fixed blades and axes. I sort of started out as a bit of an axe and multi-tool kind of channel, even when I think back on my channel. But, it was out of necessity. And then I moved away from that rural setting, but I still had I developed the love for the sharp things. And I've always been a bit creative. I was never surprised that I ended up making YouTube videos. I've always made stuff. I've always was like a drama student at school and all that sort of thing. So it's funny when I look back on it, whenever my interest in knives has actually decreased, my interest in making the videos has increased to meet it. So the two things have perpetuated and cycled around each other, keeping me in the knife game very much. So sometimes you'll probably notice on my channel, I'll make videos that probably aren't as knife centric, or they're the more odd off the wall videos. They're just as important to sort of, even though they're not even about knives, sometimes they keep me in the game of making videos, which will eventually bring me back to knives. It's a funny, being a knife YouTuber it's a weird way of experiencing the knife hobby. That's for sure. And I think Mark Knife Bro would say the same thing. I think it's a mixing of two interests really that makes kind of one larger one. It's kind of developed into that. It's very strange. Very strange.
Yeah. We were talking right before we rolled that, you and, Advanced Knife Bro are, to me, kindred spirits, and you sit on the same shelf in my YouTube universe, and it's humor and it's filmmaking. He is a filmmaker by training, and it really shows in his work.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Stuff's amazing, isn't it?
And you can tell that now that you say that you are a drama student, it all makes sense.
It's just that stupid, just that need to put something extra in that just to, and it's probably just, it goes back to the old days when you're doing a play or you're doing like improv or something like that, and you just want to do that little flourish that gets you the big laugh, and it's still that translating into my dumb videos. Cause I do try and make videos that I think about the channels that I never miss a video of, and I think, well, I want to make videos like them. And so the channels, I'll never miss an Advanced Knife Bro video. I'll never miss a Dutch Bushcraft Knives video. Cause no matter what they're reviewing, I know they're going to present it in a way that's going to have some flair. It's going to be probably funny. It's going to have some good shots and stuff. Whereas the other channels, there's a lot of channels that I love, but say I won't watch a watch review because I'm just not into watches. But if Mark at Advanced Knife Bro reviewed a watch, I would watch that review because that would get me over that line. So, and those are the kind of videos that I try to make. I don't think I'm as sharp with my writing because I don't really write. I don't have a process. I do kind of just stream of consciousness my videos. Mark actually writes his videos. So that's why they're so like crisp and sort of consistently funny. Mine are a bit more slapdash, I think. But and the Dutch Bushcraft guys, they do proper productions. They just do one single weekly video, though, so you can see where they use their time, whereas I'll kind of just trickle out whatever nonsense I'm sort of working on at the time and kind of just falls out of my channel, whereas, yeah, those guys, Mickey and Martin, just they do a Thursday event video, and that's that I've obviously found themselves comfortable with.
You mentioned how one interest feeds another and kind of back and forth. And I find that with a lot of creative people that I've known and myself included. I need various irons in the fire at once to keep interest in any of them because, you know, I've got this. I mean, I do have an attention span, but sometimes I need to totally change the channel to get myself going. And you had a period of that. I remember seeing a video of yours maybe a year and a half ago where you, I guess you were getting a little sick and tired of it for a while or just feeling the well run dry.
Yeah.
And then you came back and kind of explained yourself.
Yep.
Not that it's anyone's business, you came back and you have fans, so you feel responsible, I'm sure.
A little bit, yeah, for sure.
I would imagine it was some of that creative filmmaking aspect of it or just, being dramatic that helped you come back.
It was a combination of, and I think that fatigue was actually caused by a part of my channel that isn't knife related. I had the misfortune of, and this is what everyone seems to want, the big viral hit. I had the misfortune of a decently sized video kind of taking off, and it was about my bloody cat, Basil, of all things. And so all of a sudden on my channel, because, you know, if you're a YouTube guy, you have your creator app. It's one of those things you just find yourself checking too much throughout the day. And so I had this video about Basil really take off. It got to 300,000 views or something within a couple of weeks, and it just went stupid. And so I had all these bloody cat people in my comments, and cat people are, if you think there's toxic elements to the knife community, the cat community is just insane. Like, it was full on. Like, I shouldn't have bought a cat. I should have rescued a cat. I shouldn't have bought a bred cat. All of these things that I, all these mortal sins.
You feed your cat too much.
Yeah, exactly. And I was committing all these mortal sins. And it's funny, like, you try and be thick skinned, and I'm getting better with being thick skinned with the comments and all that sort of stuff. It's a matter of just over time, you build up this resilience. Talk to Slicey Dicey about it. He's been reviewing for 20 years. He doesn't care what you say to him. I'm still getting there. It's one of those things. Every time I check my app, I'd end up arguing with some dickhead about my feeding my cat too much. So it was a bit of that going on as well, a bit of knife fatigue. Because I tell you what, as much as the steel test interests me, that's a lot. It's a repetitive task, and so that burns you out just a little bit as well. But then I think my response to that was I jumped straight into like film student mode. And I made these. Have you seen my Spyderco Advocate review that just went on? And it was just this insanity. It was all just this edited mashup of just nonsense. I've just republished it. Not to plug myself too badly, but just republished it as Advocate, a cursed film. The joke was that Nick Shabazz sends me this Spyderco Advocate, and my thought was, I'm just going to do this insane review on it, and I hope someone at Spyderco sees it and just. And it just makes them feel strange for a day. Like, that was my goal with this video. And, so I made this and it was really cathartic, and lots of people who watch my channel just had no interest in it. And that was totally fine, but it felt so good to make. And I got all my buddies from all the other reviewer buddies, and Nick Shabazz did some voiceovers. Advanced Knife Bro did a little bit in it. And it was just this good collaboration of these ridiculous videos that mean nothing. And it's just this. A stream of consciousness, every odd little weird gag I could think of doing. It ends up being about a half an hour film if you watch it start to finish. But anyway, so that was pretty much like, as much as people deride when I do the odd stuff, I think they get a lot more thumbs downs and a lot more negative comments. You get the guy in the comment, if you're going to start making videos like this, I'm out. Unsubscribe.
Yeah.
As much as people.
See ya.
Yeah. And it's a bit like that because I think if it wasn't for those videos, I may have sort of pulled the pin or even just backed off for a lot longer. So, yeah, it was good to tap into that stupid film school side of me or that, I'm doing air quotes. I know you can't see it because it's a podcast. That artistic side and just make something completely baffling. And it got like 5% of the views that most of my videos get. And it wasn't made for that. It was just a completely selfish piece made for me. And that really – and me doing that or me doing like a – sometimes I'll just go and just do like a really random specific joke in like one of my Knife Lab intros or something like that. It's that stuff that keeps me excited for making videos. So you get a lot of folks who just like, I just want please just review the knife. I want to know how long the knife is. I want to know how much the steel cuts. You get those folks all the time, but they don't realize that, sorry guys, to get that, you also need to put up with my bullshit as well.
My favorite of your recent videos, I was belly laughing. It was the 80-10 video, that whole opening with the tool.
I was pretty proud of that one.
It was, and the screaming.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was, hilarious.
Usually by the time I've jumped into like an online gag, it's probably been off of Reddit or Instagram for a couple of weeks, but I like to keep a toe in the meme stream of what's going on. And that was kind of a bit of a, you've seen the Kyle stuff, the Kyle memes. The meme is at the moment, probably about 2 months ago now when it was cool. The meme was guys called Kyle do this. It's just as the, some guys chosen a random thing. If you're called Kyle, you do this. And it was kind of a bit of a reaction to all that. So I do try and keep somewhat relevant, but I know it's like cringy dad trying to keep up with it. I'm sure a teenager would think I was so out of date already, but it's that cringy dad level of trying to keep up with, hey kids, you know, hey fellow children, you think this is funny? So it's me doing that, and it seems to get a good response, so I keep making them. But, and it's funny, I think I just got the knife, and I was going to do my running gag with Cold Steel is that I play the Manly Man song, and I do like a funny intro like that, and I was going to do something like that, and then I thought, no, I think I'm going to run with this Kyle stuff, and I went and got a can of Monster from the service station, and yeah.
Oh, that's what it was.
I just went with it, and yeah, the video's done quite well. I looked at the AdSense revenue, right? And it's actually paid for that can of Monster I bought to shoot the video. So,
hey,
pretty cool,
there you
huh?
Go.
Yes,
that's
yeah,
not bad.
Coming full circle.
It's starting to roll
yeah,
in, man.
Exactly. I'll be having two monsters for my next video. You never know. This right.
So another thing I want to ask you about, and this was in you know the three recent short videos of the knives that Stasa23 sent to you. The Best Tech Tercel, which is weird to name a knife after a Toyota, but okay, it's a question that percolated, and I've asked other people this, and because it's something I think about myself. I've been collecting a long time, and I have knives that I don't even think about carrying anymore. Mm. I'm like, geez, I can't. That's so out of date.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
But really, it's still just made out of steel and G10 and titanium or whatever.
Yep.
And your review of the Best Tech, you kind of touch on that. You're like, this is kind of like knife circa 2013. You know.
Yeah.
So do you think that knives can go out of date? Like, can a hammer go out of date?
I think there'll be trends, and I think there'll be things that the industry picks up that we want, and so the industry will respond. And there's a smaller YouTuber called Vinny Nero, who said this much better than probably I'm about to say it. And he basically says that when we make a big deal out of things on the community, then the industry will pick up on that a little bit slower, and then they'll make a version of that for us, because they'll say, hey, you kids like this, we've made more of this. We heard you kids like blank, here is more blank. And so I think back 2013, you were getting those first few really well produced Chinese knives. You got that custom level action for $200. And that was what people were making a big deal of. You'd watch all the old reviews, and the person would go on and on about, you know, the drop shutty action and all that sort of stuff. So I think, yeah, that knife is a bit of a knife representing that time. And it's an interesting thought, because I believe now, and geez, with the amount of noise that's been going on lately, which again, maybe to the benefit, and really not knocking those Rockwell guys, because it probably is steering the dialogue towards maybe something you could argue is a bit more practical than action and things, which is maybe now the industry is going to look towards, you know, getting their knives ground really thin behind the edge, or maybe they're going to look towards having really comfortable handles or whatever it is. But, or maybe they're going to look at, yeah, really getting the most out of their steel performance. The industry will respond with what we all talk about the most. Like any business that's, you know, got common sense, they'll be having their ear to the interwebs and seeing what we're all talking about. And it's no surprise that back then, I think, what was it, the Kaiser started making really flash knives, and then you get Wii knives come out, and they just took the world by storm, all the online world by storm a bit, that you could get this, you know, action that was comparable to something that you'd have to pay $1,000 for just the year before. So it was definitely a response to that, I think. But then you look at that actual knife, and yeah, right now it does nothing for me, because it doesn't have what I like. And I think I'm just at a fortunate point in time where what I like in a knife is what's maybe becoming what everyone else likes as well, which is good. So it's like when you like, say if you like wearing a denim jacket all the time, and then eventually you get like every 20 years being wearing a denim jacket actually becomes fashionable again. I think my moment's about to come, funny. You know, it's about to, the industry might start to think. Cause I mean, I've got that TRM Adam. It's not on me now, but it's up in my room, and that knife is just impeccably ground, right? It's just ground
beautiful.
So thin, and it's just an amazing little cutter, and it's flat ground, and they've just done a proper flat grind where they've got it really thin behind the edge. And I would wonder if they hadn't been listening to everyone talking about how they want their knives to cut for a long time or slice really well, maybe that knife wouldn't have been like that. I don't know what data they used to steer their, you know, this is how we're making a knife decision. But you wonder if that's, you know, even that sort of thing's not linked. Because if that's a sign of where it's going, then it's absolutely great. I mean, not that there hasn't always, there's always been knives that sliced amazing. Like I've got a Buck 110 in the kitchen there, and it's probably, probably one of the best. It's a Buck 110, but you can't say that it doesn't slice really well. So maybe they're just going to revisit that. Or I'm not sure, but yeah.
You can also throw it overboard and keep your boat in place.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's the thing. If it, and not, like most things, it's a pendulum. So who knows, in about a year's time, we might all have like amazing slicing knives, but with the action is like a, you know, rusty old, you know, box of bolts. Like, you never know. Sometimes it swings too far the other way. But yeah, I think the best tech Tersil back in that day was people. And remember, what else were we playing with in 2013? Bloody fidget spinners. They were, that was you know, it was peak fidget spinner time. If I remember correctly, it was about then. And yeah, you know, so it's really, the knife just reminds me of that point in time in the community where we're all playing with spinning tops and fidget spinners as well as knives. And so what do you get when you make a knife? Of course, a knife that has amazing action, looks really elegantly machined, but maybe isn't so great at being a knife. So it's, yeah, that was really interesting to handle. And I almost didn't publish that review because I was thinking, you know what? When something doesn't connect with me, I'm always a bit like, is it really worth me doing a hit piece on this knife? But yeah, it was an interesting thing to bring up, I suppose. So I'm kind of glad I did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like you were necessarily dissing on Best Tech or anything like that. I felt more like you were making a comment on how the industry has, you know, has developed. And I feel like right now there are more knife people than ever before. And so maybe, you know, in the early 2000s, the late 90s, it was all, you know, mostly in the hands of a few collectors and then a bunch of law enforcement and military guys. And then as and so all the overbuilt knives and stuff are made for that group as it was bleeding into the collectors. And now it's people who love the thingness of it. I mean, that's, I love the look, the feel to play with, to use knives. And I think there are a lot of people, it's more acceptable than guns, you know? So I think, or other associated hobbies, you know, those have kind of always been, you know, stepsisters or whatever. But I just feel like now that your average office guy might have a pocket knife, especially if they work in my office, I end up giving everybody a knife, but, you know, so tastes have changed.
Yeah, for sure. I always say one of the big things the knife community missed, like, well, not the knife community, but knife manufacturers missed, was they had this, and I know that we diss this, hipsters are something you make fun of, right? You know, it's common. They're easy sport to tease hipsters. I'm a bit of a bloody hipster myself. I'd probably fit that label a little bit. But the industry missed that. You had a few little brands. You had the James brand. You had a few little brands trying to make those
total hipster
fashionable
brand,
knives. Yeah, but they were too. It's too little, too late. It was about a year late that they decided to start making modern slip joints and things like that that the hipsters were actually looking for. Like, if someone in 2014, when that movement was at its strongest, if someone had made a knife that looked like a grandpa knife that would have looked good in, you know, an Abercrombie and Fitch catalog, if Benchmade or if Cold Steel or if Spyder,
that Lion Steel you were just playing with.
Yeah. You know, all this stuff, though, they missed it. It's too late. They could have got so many more knives and so many more hands if they'd properly, you know, if they'd probably not listened to, because there would have been voices in the community, stop making hipster knives, hipster garbage, all this stuff. These companies just would have made big dollars, which then they could have reinvested into making knives that the rest of us love if they'd just kind of been a little bit less. I don't know if they were scared. I don't even know if they're aware, to be honest. But if they'd been a little bit more willing to maybe make something that looked a little bit nerdier or looked a little bit more you know, subdued, or just looked like a hipster knife. But if they'd made that at the right time, who knows how many more knife guys we could have got on board. Because I look at my own origins in knives. You know what my first damn knife was that I bought? It was the Bear Grylls Ultimate Survival Knife.
Yeah, I remember
you know,
that.
And you know, now I've got a Police 4 in my hand. I've got a Native Chief. That's where I started. So if we could have got a bunch of sort of dorky hipster dudes started off with some, you know, artisan looking pocket knives from Benchmade, maybe they'd just be amongst us again as cool new voices in the community. So I always regret that no one really, apart from some small micro brands, really jumped in on that, because it could have been a way. And instead, back at the time, they were still pushing tactical, they were still pushing all that sort of stuff. And those markets are fine, but I think that they're saturated. There was, they could have jumped in and done a little bit more with probably, you know, and who knows how long, you know, even if only half of those guys who bought, you know, say, let's imagine a knife. So say Spyderco made the Spyderco Hit Boy, right? So say back in 2014, only, you know, only half the guys who bought a Spyderco Hit Boy kept catering a knife. But that's still, you know, even if it's an extra 5,000 new knife enthusiasts, that magnifying effect over the next 10 years of sales they would have made, you know, yeah, some of them would have just put it down, never carried it, and decided knives weren't for them. But yeah, it was a bit of a missed opportunity, in my opinion. I always thought that. It's nice to say it out loud, because I've always thought it, but yeah.
Well, you put words to it quite nicely, sir.
Yeah.
I got some more.
Yeah.
What kind of uses do you put your knives to, A, and B, it's probably not tactical or self-defense, but where do you come down on that side of things?
Well, my home pocket knife use, I've got a box house over there that I made with my Spyderco police for my kids yesterday. It's made out of like several moving boxes. So it's kind of dad stuff at home. My job is actually in the tactical and in the, like, I'm a first responder kind of guy. So I actually I don't speak about it in my reviews and stuff because I don't want to run off that economy of, you know, I don't want to portray myself as like a badass because I'm not. I use my knives in a very rudimentary way at work, but I suppose it would qualify as hard use. Like I had a donkey that had got itself stuck in a whole bunch of just cable. It was just in a mess and it was in a fence that was hanging off onto a road. And so I used my Falconeven F1 and I completely dulled the crap out of the edge of it. But I cut through all this garbage that was attached to this donkey just on the side of it on a roadside. So I do a bit of that stuff at work, like the stuff that I guess the companies would probably love to say, yes, this is what we make knives for. But yeah, I do a little bit of that. Like it's just the whole thing. I don't really like to bring into my videos because I don't want my job to start saying you're using your job as a way to, you know, become a fancy YouTuber and use your, you know, valor or whatever is. So I'm not interested in that at all. But I do have quite varied organic knife use. I guess you could call it, like the things that actually I do use a knife for, from the dad stuff to the little bit more intense stuff. Like I'm not a fireman clearing, and I'm not a SWAT team guy clearing rooms or anything like that. But, you know, I still use them relatively robustly. But, then again, most of my, like when I do a review, the most telling thing for it is probably my rope cut test, because that does so much for showing the ergonomics of a knife, which is just as important, if not more, than the blade itself. Sometimes a knife seems amazing in my hand, and then I do a rope cut test with it, and it's just not as fun. Like, the Paramilitary 2 is a great example of that. Like, it seems like such an ergonomic handle. But when I do that repetitive, non-stop push, you know, draw cut that I do on that rope, after a couple of hundred goes, it's not the nicest place to be, having your hand wrapped around a Paramilitary 2. And it's interesting, that dimension that gives it as well. But, yeah, my average knife use is probably just like everyone else's. No more glamorous or anything than anyone else's, really. Box houses, opening cat food, dog food. I do that thing and it grosses my wife out, but you know, sometimes the kitchen knives are just in an awkward spot. They're maybe at the back of the dishwasher or whatever. So I'm not above maybe using I got my police out last night and I cut up some salami with it. And I can just see my wife will walk past and just stare at me and just like, you know, we've got kitchen knives. Yeah, so I get the look, of course, but you know, I'm not above doing that as well. And it, you know, it's sometimes you might be in the fridge and you need to just quickly open something while the fridge door's still open. You want to get it closed before it starts beeping at you. So I'll just whip out whatever I've got in my pocket and use that for that as well. So yeah,
Baby, it's food safe. That's what I say. Exactly, it's food safe, exactly. Baby.
I use my EDCI or whatever that stuff's called. So you keep it nice and clean. But, yeah.
What are your ideal properties in a carry knife, pocket knife? I think I know what they are. Ergonomics and good steel and thinly ground blade.
But I've never been fussed about locks. I don't care how it locks up. I mean, I like it to have a strong-ish lock, or at least a lock where a good example is the cardboard. If you use a Swiss Army knife cutting cardboard, sometimes you're clumsy, you pull back a bit and the knife, because it's a slip joint, will close. So I want something that's going to be stronger than that. And that's about my lock needs met, really. I mean, if it was something for work, I'm probably just using I'm using a fixed blade at work anyway, so it's not really, I'm not after a huge lock in any sense, in any real field that I'm using my knives. Don't mind about the locks. I just like simplicity, really. Like, my favorite elements of knife design are things like Almar, things like simple Spydercos, knives that kind of just look like folding steak knives is probably my favorite look of a knife. I mean, you look at my knives on the table, I've got the Spyderco Police, the Native Chief, and I like these a lot. Like, they're just black G10 handles, just nice and indiscriminate.
I love the Native Chief.
Yeah, it seems really nice. I've only just got it. Nick's sent it over for me to play with.
I'm terrified of breaking the tip.
You know, it is quite delicate there, isn't it? And I'll be doing a comparison with the Police 4, because you see there, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Do these two knives really need to exist? It's funny, isn't it? There's a lot going on in both of these. I mean, there's a steel difference and a liner difference, but Anyway, that's the story to follow, I guess. But yeah, I like my knives to have simple handles. I was talking about that best tech again, that those complicated handles that are supposed to fit your fingers exactly into grooves never work for me. I don't care about bearings or washers, really. Washers are, I think I'd prefer washers if someone made me choose, but it would never be something that stopped me from buying a knife. I like to have a blade probably 3.5 inch is my happy spot for a blade. Don't mind smaller. I don't mind a little bit larger. But yeah, mainly just I'm a bit of a edge performance guy, so I suppose Spyderco does okay. I wouldn't mind even if Spyderco went a bit thinner, because my EDC knives I do use for quite light tasks. Only thin edges aren't great if you're, you know, doing, you know, demolition type jobs and stuff. But for me, I'd like thin edges. I think I've been steering towards preferring hollow grinds lately over flat. But yeah. Again, as long as it cuts okay, like. I've had a few knives that have come and have just been really disappointed in that I've had to actually completely almost reprofile out of the box to get it where I like it. But then maybe that's just me being too fussy as well. It's like I say a lot, like, say Zero Tolerance will sell you a knife with quite a thick edge. And I think that goes in line with their hard use philosophy and all that sort of stuff. And that's fine. But every time I get one, I'm just not quite happy until I've thinned it back to 17 degrees per side. And then it does what I like it to do. But whether I should force my own wants onto every company is probably completely wrong.
I think you're completely justified.
Yeah, I don't know. Mainly performance is where I'm going lately. I'm not adverse to having just a fun knife to flick, but I always just prefer that to be a sub feature of a knife that's cutting well and is a joy to sort of. Everyone likes when you can just slice through something in a nice long continuous cut. That's the feeling for me. It's like when you got the scissors going and you just have to push and you don't have to snip anymore. Like everyone loves that feeling. And thin, well ground knives and good steels seem to tick that little, I don't know if it's ASMR or whatever it is, they seem to stroke that little part of my brain pretty well. So that's generally what I'll shop for. Like, that's what gets me excited when I see a new knife coming out. If it looks like it's going to slice well, if it's got a nice neutral handle, then that's probably the knife for me. And it leaves me with a lot of quite boring looking knives, but you find your differences in them and you fuss over them in your own way, and you see them all as your own little knives, don't you, in the end?
Yeah. Well, they become a part of the family until you sell them off.
I did a video, like, I've got, like, my unsellables, like, my little permanent collection, but that is quite hard to get into. But when I look at that, with the exception of the Buck Marksman, which is just, like, the freak mutant stepbrother of them all, they're all quite basic looking knives, very simple sort of. So, yeah, once it's in that, it's pretty safe, but, otherwise I'm pretty ruthless as well, so to speak, with getting rid of stuff that's not absolutely connected with me.
Gosh, I admire that. I do. I like to think I'm not a materialist, but I have a really hard time getting rid of knives. And then I finally get up the gumption to do it. You know, I spoke to Austin over at the Epic Snuggle Bunny recently, and he's on this reduce and refine kick.
Yeah, he's reduce and refine.
Yeah, so should I. I'll go into my knife case and I'll stand the ones up that I think I can part with on the edge.
Yeah.
And then when I'm away from them, I'm like, oh, I could totally get rid of that. And then I come home and I open it up and I start playing with it. And I'm like, yeah, but it feels so good in hand. Mm-hmm. And then I have a hard time. So I worry that I'm becoming a bit of a materialist with this. I'm not a curator of a museum. I don't need to represent every lock type and every steel type.
Yeah,
and every,
that's,
you know,
a temptation as well, isn't it? You're wanting to have one of everything. And yeah. Well, this police here, like my police four, this was one of the few. I've had two or three that I have sold and had that instant regret and had to buy back. So the police four was one of those. I don't know why I sold it. I think I just saw something else and I was like, and I needed to raise money fast because as you get, you get that temporary insanity. So the police four, I'm glad to have back, and this will stay, I think. I'm relatively sure. Last one was the American Lawman. That's a wonderful knife from Cold Steel. And I'd sold mine and I felt silly straight away. And the next one that I need to get back is, it's a fixed blade from Lion Steel called the T5, and that's a wonderful fixed blade knife. And I again sold it in a moment of idiocy, and I'll get that back as well. But that, apart from that, I'm relatively regret free with my little sort of reduce and refine Austin Snuggle Bunny type ethos. So doing pretty well, I think.
So where do you see the future of the industry going? You mentioned before you might not be sure, but what's the next obsession going to be, do you think?
Next obsession? Well, I think this steel stuff's going to be hard to ignore. It's going to result in two things. Either the company's not ever talking about Rockwell or hardness again, ever. So it's going to be either that or, and that, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if half did that and the other half really pandered to it and became like, this is our, you know, M390 at 64 Rockwell. And they'll be really performance. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the industry split a little bit, into those two schools of thought, or if, yeah, one or the other took over. So I think that's probably what's going to be, next on the radar for a lot of folks. But then I'm aware, I don't know US politics at all, but I'm aware there's some stuff with your market changes and stuff, is there, with how economical it might be to do business if you're drop shipping from China. I'm not sure if there's taxes or something that's changing, so that may have an effect as well. Is that like to the point where
tariffs and such?
Yeah, tariffs, because it can always be something completely random like that. All of a sudden, maybe Wii knives and Best Tech knives will be an extra $70 each, and that'll just, you know, and that'll give the reins back to Cold Steel. You just never know. So it could be something that's dictated by our trends, or it could just be something that's dictated by some bureaucrat signing something somewhere. And all of a sudden, some steel's in short supply, or all of a sudden, it's more expensive to send S35VN to China and get it back than just to make the knives here and make the whole thing here. So you just never know.
Or an American company like Spyderco, who does a lot of manufacturing in China, having tariffs on the Tenacious, once a cheap knife, coming down at, you know, $150 now,
exactly,
or something like that.
So they need to either evolve it and put a slightly better steel they can source over there into it, or they need to, just make it here or stop making it. It was really interesting to see. Nick went and saw Gerber. Did you see Nick Shabazz went and saw Gerber?
Yeah, I saw that, but I didn't see the video. Yeah, I haven't watched it yet.
It's a good what he said. Look, Gerber, obviously, they seem like they're at that crossroads too, where what I would say is they're probably getting some – they'd be feeling it. Gerber do a lot of – they use like just their pretty mid-range American steels, and they seem to be doing a lot of stuff in their American factory now, and they're really going for that whole, we're getting back to American production. And that must be whether they smell something on the wind coming, but there'd be an element of that, I think, there, because that really seems like they're trying to weigh in and say, you know what, we can be, why do we have to be embarrassing Gerber? We could be cool Gerber. We could swing with zero tolerance and golden Colorado Spyderco, you know? It seems like that's what they're trying to do. Whether or not they'll do it, I have no idea.
Well, they did. They used to be. Yeah. My dad had an awesome sort of something competing with the 110 anyway, a lockback in the 70s. It was awesome. Yep.
And just prestigious, they used to have it. Everyone knows the Gerber story, I suppose, by now. But I just wonder if they wouldn't be better off just because, you know, it was a really interesting day, right? I saw that video of Nick, and it's Gerber saying, you know, they're trying to sort of say, we're legitimate again, we're making these amazing American knives, and with the fastball was just the start of things, which is great. And then the next video below it was Gideon's Tactical reviewing this Gerber orange-handled machete thing that's made of 3CR13 MOV in China, and I'm just like, that's Gerber's problem in a single image is this. They've got these two things they're saying. So they just need to say, you know what? The Chinese knives, they're not Gerber knives anymore, they're Fiskars knives. That's what they need to do and say, in Gerber, if you have a Gerber knife, it's made in America, and it's, whether it's good or not is up to, you know, everyone to figure out, but it's going to be, it's got integrity. If it's got Gerber on it, we're back to having integrity. And that's what the Gerber needs to do, because it's every stride forward they take with something cool like the fastball, then you get all these reviewers who show off these like machetes that snap at the handle, and and people don't have the time to put as much thought into it as maybe knife nerds do, but people who make sort of more broad assumptions are just going to say, I saw that one good Gerber knife, but then there was that video from 2 years ago of someone breaking that Bear Grylls Gerber Parang on the, you know, it's, that's a funny thing. But I think Gerber are probably aware of whatever's cooking with the tariff side of the industry, and I think that might be also why they're making this push for better local production too. So back to the original question, I think that is probably something that's going to impact a little bit, just as much as our knife nerd thoughts and what we like. So, but in terms of if knife nerd thoughts are what's steering it, then yes, I think it'll be performance blades, thin behind the edge. That's the stuff. All the terms that us reviewers start parroting, because God, we do some groupthink, us reviewers. I really try and separate myself from it, but I tell you what, I catch myself saying these same things, and it's funny. Like I did a video a while back where I was. Because I used to always just say, because I got on with the Nut and Fancy train, Nut and Fancy, like the father of gear reviews, Spyderco started doing flat ground knives, and Nut and Fancy puts in his videos, flat grind is the best grind, it slices the best.
FFG, baby.
Yeah, FFG, man. And, when I've actually sort of cut knife first knife, hollow grind beats it for 90% of the stuff, and the other stuff, it just kind of matches it. It's one of those things. There's going to be a little bit more emphasis on, I think, us actually, you know, seeking this performance from our blades just a little bit. I hope so anyway.
Do you think that these companies are too responsive? Do you think they're too responsive to fans and YouTubers?
Oh, it's funny, isn't it? Because on one hand, I'm thinking they weren't responsive enough jumping on the hipster train that I was talking about before. But then in another, maybe it isn't best to snap to a decision when, you know, just two or three really vocal people on the internet have a problem as well. So, or have a suggestion. I don't know. I think it's always going to be about 6 months after, given how fast you can make things and design things and all that sort of stuff. So I think if we all decided tomorrow that we all want really thin blades, I think in about a year's time, at SHOT Show, Blade Show 2020, we'd all start seeing these really thin blades. Maybe. I mean, there's certainly an element of stubbornness in companies as well. They're also run by humans who have their own, you know, and often they're run by, you know, more senior humans who would probably think, well, I always like knives like this, so stuff it, I'm still making these knives. But
these are what we know how to make.
Yeah, exactly. So there's always going to be that element as well, but I think it's going to be reactive enough, and it'll be just father capitalism. It'll whoever's quick enough and gets in on the trend quick enough will make their money, and whoever's not won't. And yeah, I just think that with regard to like when problems arise, I think I never have anything but sympathy for like just the poor people on the coalface for the companies when like issues happen, because we're all so quick to just like insta shame. If you get if you have a slightly awkward dealing with some customer service rep, people will just post the conversation now. And I know this because I was a dick and I did that with Steel Will, and I just felt like such an asshole after it. And yeah, people are in my ear saying, "Nah, you were right. That was fun to do it," but it didn't change the fact of how I actually felt doing it. And I just felt like a complete turd, just being like, you know, with this poor chick, she's just trying to deal with me as a customer. And you know, so it's that whole element of it that I don't quite know what the answer is to it, because you don't want to silence people. People should be able to say what their experiences are, for sure. But I can say is, and again, back to what I was saying before, just remember there's humans at every step of this knife supply and also knife use chain. As much as the customers are human, so is, you know, Instagram lady who's just answering the questions as well. So,
right. Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, cancel culture. Is it really going to come to the knife world? Come on, people.
They haven't canceled Benchmade yet, have they? And I mean, Benchmade as far as I'm aware, Benchmade set up the NRA convention or the NRA gun show, whatever it was, a few months ago. And I wasn't aware of any firebombings that happened, or wasn't aware of the guy getting caught out. And so I think a lot of it is just internet talk from people who just like internet drama. And without getting too broad, I think that's just a massive problem with the world in general these days. Just a real small vocal minority just making it their business to be on Twitter, just bigging things up. And I mean, just in another thing is just the amount of like fake fans, and you know, you can buy followers from a follower house now. And so if you get it, you can buy yourself 50,000 followers on Instagram. And then of course, if you go and say something to say, you have a problem with a Gerber knife and you've got 50,000 followers, Gerber might look at it and go, "Holy shit, this guy's a big swinging dick. We got to listen to what he says." So there's just so much to not trust on the internet as well. As great as the internet is, there's just so much to be cautious of as well. Like it's a full on thing. And, I don't know what the answer is to that. But yeah, there's just the cancel culture. I think the knife industry is pretty resilient to it because there's just lots of established institutions, and nothing's ever going to be life or death that comes up. Even the worst drama isn't going to be, unless it finds out that, you know, Cold Steel's like, you know, building nuclear weapons and selling them to like Turkmenistan or something. Maybe that, but really it's a pretty resilient, pretty rooted in tradition industry that I think will be relatively immune to that, because like as a sub interest of mine being a YouTuber, I'm just interested in YouTube as well. And YouTube at the moment is just toxic, with the big YouTubers taking each other down and sharing each other's DMs and trying to expose each other. That's like a real economy on YouTube at the minute. And it's like, and I just look at that and I think, well, this is half of my hobby, just because I just enjoy, outside of knives, I just enjoy lots of YouTubers, other ones. Yeah. And I'm just like, man, I would hate for this to leak into like my other part of my hobby, because this is just intense. It's
toxic.
Like it's a real odd way to spend your free time, just being so angry. Like it's like, you know, you can go to your work and be angry because your boss sucks. So your kids can give you a hard time. You can be angry at that. But when the chips are down and you're just sitting at your computer, why aren't you looking at stuff that's making you happy? So I don't know.
Thank you. Exactly.
I think we're relatively immune. I would love to see, and no one's ever going to tell you, but I'd love to see if Benchmade sales were actually affected by the sort of the cancel sort of effort on them. I'd love to see it, but I mean, they'd say no. I'm sure most people would say no, but maybe they were slightly. Again, it was really interesting. I, Rob's video the other day, which I don't really, back to that, I don't really have an opinion of it. It's just, it's his opinion, which he's sharing, and that's fine. But, you know, you see all the comments when the comments were up, you know, unsubscribed, I'm off, this is it, done. And then I looked at Rob's Social Blade and he'd lost 3 subscribers that day. Like it's, you know, there's just so much noise.
That's hilarious.
And then when it actually comes to, the problem with the internet is that measurable numbers are really hard to find. So, yeah, as loud as people can seem like they're being, it is, we just need to remember, it is still often just someone at home just trying to whip up a Twitter frenzy or whip up a comment frenzy as well. So as with everything, the real decisions are going to be made, people voting with their wallets or proper, large, wide-scale, you know, grassroots change is all that's going to really make an effect, I think, on the knife industry. Not that it particularly needs to change. I think it's ticking along just nicely as it is.
Well, what about your knife hobby / obsession? What do you see as the future of your knife thing?
I mean, I've got my grails, obviously. I need to do a video testing a Rockstead knife. There's a fella called Sean, and he does the Big Brown Bear channel and Triple B handmade knives, and he is on the apex of finding. So he'll get Rex 121, he'll heat treat it to 70, and then he'll put it in a knife that's like 0.01 microns behind the edge. Like,
you have a couple of his knives, right? The little fixed blades.
No, those are other small makers. Sean, I'd need to save up a half a week's paycheck to get what I want from Sean.
I got you.
But yeah, that's on my list as well. I want to experience the pinnacle of performance, because right now, very unsatisfyingly to me, it's a, the Rex 121 knife that I've had was great, but the thing at the top of my bloody knife lab results, for whatever they're worth, is a Sandarin tungsten carbide knife. And it's like one of these, have you seen the Sandarin TCK?
No.
It's a cool little thing, but it's kind of not really a knife as much as like all my other knives are knives. It's like a little, it's a piece of tungsten carbide that's at 72 Rockwell. Like, it's a really hard little piece.
Whoa.
It's amazing. It cut more than anything else until I got a professional sharpener to sharpen my Rex 121 with a proper fancy edge. Then it just matched it, which was the most annoying thing in the world, because I stop in increments on my cuts, right? And I was just like, oh, well, this is what the TCK cuts. I'll just test if it's still going now. And it stopped right there. And I would have loved to have had steel win, you know, like over, because tungsten carbide is not a traditional knife blade material.
Right.
I was like, maybe steel can take this back. So anyway, so I'd love to experience the ultimate in what you can do with the steel. And I've got no doubt that it's going to be from Sean or from a maker like him that's properly performance focused. So that's where I want to go. So it probably does involve spending a little bit more money or just a couple of large sums. But that's my ambitions for probably the next 6 months to a year, is to get something from Rockstead just to see if that's all hype. I see their rope cutting tests. I'm like, they do very well, but they kind of push cut. I want to see if my cuts are a bit different. Mm-hmm. All the nerdy minutiae in my head are ticking over just watching Rockstead go. So there's that. I think I do need to take a rest from my edge retention, because I actually have a really sore shoulder, like consistently sore shoulder lately from doing it. So I'm having a rest from doing
repetitive stress.
Yeah, really. So I am having a bit of a break from doing that, because I just hate to like have an ongoing issue from it. I'd feel so stupid. So I'm having a bit of a break. So I'm sort of focusing probably a bit more in the future on, and I'll still do cutting tests on my reviews, but I'm probably just going to be focusing on just reviews. And I've got to get out and do one of my overnighters again. People just ask, as soon as I finish and publish one, they're asking when the next one's going to be. My dickhead survival thing, I go away. And I was going to do it last night, but my daughter got sick and I didn't get to go. And I was a bit like, I thought it's going to be really interesting. I'd be on this podcast having probably been awake all night, sleeping in a ditch, and I'd be really worse for me. So it was probably for the best it didn't happen last night. But so I'll be just doing some other kind of stuff that people have been asking me to do for ages. I got really caught up on edge retention lately, because I got this amazing box of Spyderco mules, obviously, that I was working my way through. So yeah, next 6 months to a year, probably next 6 months, just more, just basic knife stuff, just creative projects on my channel. And then in 6 months to a year, I'll probably ramp up the testing again and do some more sort of fun stuff and more exotic steels and that sort of thing. But that's probably where I'm looking to head.
Well, okay. Before we wrap, I would like to, do a little speed round with you.
Yep.
It's some questions and it's one or the other.
Okay. Cool.
Okay.
Let me have it.
So fixed or folder?
Folder.
Flipper or thumb stud?
Thumb stud.
Washers or bearings?
Washers.
Tip up or tip down?
Tip up.
Tanto or Bowie?
Tanto.
Hollow ground or flat ground?
hollow.
Full size or small?
Full size.
Gentleman's knife or tactical knife?
Tactical.
Automatic or Bally Song?
Ugh, neither.
Might be a moot point.
Yeah, it really is for me. I can't get either of them, and neither of them appeal to me that much. Anyway, on to the questions.
ZT or Wii?
ZT.
Benchmade or Spyderco?
Spyderco.
Milled titanium or spring clip?
Spring clip.
Carbon fiber or micarta?
Micarta.
Finger choil or no finger choil?
No finger choil.
Form or function?
Function.
Okay, and finally, your desert island knife. You have one knife for the rest of your life. It doesn't have to be on a desert island, but one knife for the rest of your life.
Probably got an Alex Stron fixed blade in Nitro V-Steel. It's on my channel. Been on my channel a few times. Great little 4-inch fixed blade. It's just wonderful. So it's that one.
What's it called again? I got to look that up.
The maker is Alex Stron, AD Knives, on Instagram.
Okay.
And it is probably the finest little fixed blade I've had. It's just excellent. Yeah. He's a custom maker. And I know I always find those like unsatisfying answers because you want people to sort of like, oh, I have that knife or whatever.
Yeah.
That's one of the things when I do reviews, I love to be able to review stuff that people can just look up and go and buy. So, I mean, if I was choosing something that wasn't that, I'd probably go like a Spyderco Caribbean, like that folding knife from Spyderco with the LC200 and steel, something like that. But yeah, my AD knife is probably my favorite knife.
Well, Pete of Cedric and Ada Outdoors, thank you so much for coming on the Knife Junkie podcast. I had a really fun time talking with you, and I think you're doing great things for the YouTube knife world in that you're making really entertaining and fun videos, but there's also a serious side to it. To me, I think you've amassed a nice body of work. It might be what you call bro science or anecdotal, but what else do we have but anecdotal experience in our actual lives? So I applaud you. I love your videos, and it was a real pleasure talking to you.
Well, thank you very much. Could I just do a quick shout out? If someone's after,
most definitely.
If someone was listening and wanting more scientific figures and just wanting to, if you want proper knife science, knifesteelnerds.com. Laren Thomas, check out his.
He was a guest on our show.
Yeah,
here.
So check out Laren's work because he actually has the. He's someone worth sort of hanging your coat to. So he's Hawaii. Him and Sean at Big Brown Bear, they're the people that I ask if I need to know about a steel. So that's where you look for your proper science. For me, just enjoy my videos, use them for what they're worth, but don't get too stressy about it. But yeah, look at Laren, look to Sean. If you want proper edge nerds, they're the ones to chase up. Cool.
Yeah, no doubt. He talks circles around me.
Yeah, he does. And he does. It's cerebral stuff, but it's if you're really interested, you'll love it.
All right. Thanks, Pete.
Cool, man. All good.
Thanks for coming on the show. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bob. See you, man.
Visit the Knife Junkie online at thenifejunkie.com.
We're back on episode number 42 of the Knife Junkie podcast. And Bob, before we get into hearing your takeaways about our interview today, I want to remind you that one of our sponsors for the Knife Junkie podcast is Audible. If you like listening to podcasts like this, other audio content, audiobooks, well, you can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial simply by going to audibletrial.com/knifejunkie. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, even your MP3 player. Again, audibletrial.com/thenifejunkie. Bob, another great interview. They just keep coming and getting bigger and better all the time every week. Your takeaways, your thoughts from your conversation with Pete.
Well, first of all, when you say bigger, I start thinking maybe I'm starting to blab a little too much.
No, that would be longer, not bigger.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, great conversation. I was so happy to meet him at last. I feel like I know him just because I've watched his videos for so long and you know, you kind of feel like you get to know someone. So I felt like it was just really great to get to know him. And something that an attitude that was reinforced in me is like, just remember, this is just a hobby. And we start to get, you know, it's good to take your hobbies seriously. It's good to really immerse yourself in whatever your interests and activities are. But, you know, remember that steel types and, you know, steel performance and that kind of thing. It is kind of relative to what you're going to actually be using it for. So, you know, let's not take it, that seriously, but let's really enjoy the hobby. And I feel like Pete and, you know, remember, Advanced Knife Bro, people like that really add some levity to the whole pursuit of collecting knives. And it's, you know, some people really take it awfully seriously and get in arguments and stuff like that. And guys like Pete really sort of bring the tone of the conversation back where it belongs. Mm.
Well, interesting. Ask our listeners, what was your takeaway from the interview? What do you think? You know, do you kind of agree with Bob's levity part and bringing the conversation back down, jovial nature, that kind of thing? We'd love for you to give us a call on the listener line at 724-466-4487. 724-466-4487. Please leave us a comment. What'd you like? What you don't like? Your thoughts on today's interview or past show or whatever. We'd love to hear from you. And if possible, you know, you like to leave a comment, we'd love to play it on the show and let other folks hear what you're thinking. And if you want to plug your website or product or whatever, glad for you to do that as well. So listener line, 724-466-4487.
And just remember, there's no such thing as long distance anymore. So pick up the phone, give us a call.
Just like your conversation with Pete shows, he wasn't right around the corner from you.
That's right. Not for nothing, people. when we connected with Pete in Australia, it was 10:30 his time, 9 o'clock in the evening our time, and we pressed the go button, and it was like he was next door. It was amazing. Actually, the connection to Australia was better than the connection to other places in the States.
That's true.
It was pretty bizarre.
Yeah, and special thanks to him. I think he was actually on vacation that week, right? So thanks to him for taking the time out.
Yeah, thanks, Pete.
For Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco, thanks for your interview, Bob. Thanks for everybody listening. For Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco, I'm Jim Person. I want to thank you for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, theknifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at theknifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on theknifejunkie.com/Instagram and join our Facebook group at theknifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@theknifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487. And you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.